Hello, all.
Hello.
Hello. I'm sorry I don't have a chat interface up, so unfortunately we're going to have to use our vocal interfaces. What I wanted to talk about today was to take a moment and look at all this great innovation that we've been doing and try and tie it directly into the reference environment. And part of what that involves for me is looking beyond what other people are doing that we can appropriate. Part of what I think we also need to do is, yes, look for good examples, look for good ideas, but also think about what's the core principles that we want to do and what's the core function we want to do, and how do we design systems and interfaces around that those core functions. So I'm going to talk about something called participatory reference, and this comes from some work we've been doing with the American Library Association's Office for Information Technology Policy. We put out a tech brief, and it's around the larger theme of participatory librarianship. Why participatory librarianship? Well, why not call it Library 2.0 or Web 2.0? Well, they're all loaded terms, right? What we really, I think, are talking about is, I don't know about you, but when I do something online and I'm told that it's social, and I realize that I'm not, you know, a social person by nature, it's baggage. It's a loaded term. And so what I want to think about is, if we take a look at reference, and we think about what we currently do, and ask some questions. So let's think about, what is the current model of reference? And virtual reference, digital reference, we're past those games. Chat reference, all these types of reference. The current model that we've held on to for a couple of hundred years and keep stubbornly holding on to is this. If you think about it, even if you're really cool and you're doing chat and such, where's the chat located? Most of the time it's on our website. So they're coming to our desk, even if our desk happens to be composed of HTML as opposed to wood. Right? And what's sitting behind it? A person. A librarian who's ready to answer. Not a team, not ready to go, but a person. Why a person? Well, because when we started doing reference desk, and we've had staffing problems ever since, we don't have a chance to put teams waiting on demand, so we put a person there. So what are some other problems with this current model? Well, it's library-centered. Think about what we ask people to do in virtual reference and digital. Now, widgets are helping us, but even if there are widgets, what we want our patrons to do is come into MySpace, whether it means literally walking into my library or walking onto my website or walking into my building. Use my tools, which are mine, are actually better. I mean, think about for a moment, I don't care, I'm not here to sell anything, but question point tutor, I don't care what you do. Have you ever noticed that you have to have a discussion between the user interface and the librarian interface? Why are ours better? I mean, either we're just really stupid and we need extra help on our interface, but really what we're saying is you are in a position of power to drive this conversation, so your interface looks needs to be different. The user, we're going to push pages at them, and we're going to let them chat with us. But they're not going to have our scripts, they're not going to have our ready-made things, they're not going to have a lot of the features we do. What I find very interesting, I've talked to lots of librarians, and I've taught lots of librarians and trained lots of librarians, I love talking about how reference is an unnatural act for a patron. This is not what we're doing, right? You know, please come up to me and expose your ignorance so that I may help, right? But in truth, we put ourselves in very awkward spots, right? What we're doing by putting ourselves behind these desks, physical, virtual, what have you, is we're assumed to be content experts as well as process experts. That when someone comes to us and they're asking for questions, they don't make these fine distinctions often between, oh, you have an MLS you can help me find information to, I just need the information. If you answer it from your head, that's fine. What do you mean you don't know about medieval tapestry design? Right? Well, I can help you with that question. Yeah? Do you know anything about it? No. Well, then what the hell are you doing here? Right? In many cases, librarians, we're out there and people assume that we know everything. Now, we work very hard to know everything, but it really does create this interesting tension and one that often leads to a disagreement about what we consider an answer. I want you to say, we have high principles and high theory about what a good reference answer is. We shouldn't give them the facts. We should show them and teach them and bring them to the fact and the information. Now, I want you to turn that on its head and forget that you didn't go through library school and think about it as, of course they don't give you the answer because you don't know what the hell you're talking about. Right? That's an awkward spot to be in, and that's what a patron can perceive. I asked you this question. You gave me this book. This is not what I wanted. And so we have to enter into a dialogue of setting expectations and all these other things. It assumes a one-to-one relationship. We do that for privacy. We do that for lots of reasons. But why have we always assumed that reference is best done in pairs? Why? And in truth, why do we come to ALA and come to these meetings and sit in these rooms if we assume the best way to learn is in one-to-one pairs? We should, instead of having large conference rooms, have millions and millions of booths that we can shove people in. And what I'll do is, what we'll do is, I'll start with Susan, and I'll come give you my presentation one-on-one. It'll be a while, but I'll get back. Right? The other thing is that very much reference is divorced from the locus of learning. Oh, dear God, locusts and plagues. What are they? Well, very on, I remember talking at Toronto Public Library, where they built a massive common space with lots of computers, and they said the number one thing that happened is our virtual reference statistics went through the roof. They were asking us questions in the library. What's going on? Well, that's because what we're trying to do is say, you know, when I'm in the middle of searching a database is when I want to talk to the reference server. I don't want to get out of it, go over here, change, move, whatever. So we've known for a long time that being at the desktop is too crude of a metaphor. We want to be at the application, at the point of need of the questions. So what we're seeking to do is take this function of reference and run it through these some concepts out of something called participatory librarianship. So let me back up and just give you a little bit about what I mean. Participatory librarianship is founded on a very simple concept, which is knowledge is created through conversations, and if libraries are in the knowledge business, you're in the conversation business. That when we seek to learn, we seek to converse. Now, sometimes that's one-on-one, mentor-mentee, teacher-student. Sometimes that's group-to-group. The ALA and SLA met together, and they both agreed that the A at the end means the same thing. Whatever it is. Sometimes it's in ourselves, right? If we have any learning or instructional librarians here, you've heard of metacognition or critical thinking, where we literally debate things in ourselves. And we've all in public libraries had those awkward moments where people are debating to themselves out loud. But if you take this central premise that what we're in the business of as libraries is to increase knowledge, and therefore what we're in is facilitating conversations, it means things like the knowledge comes from conversation. The artifacts that come out of that conversation are secondary. Okay. The books, the DVDs, the videos, the web pages, all of these are secondary objects. Not unimportant, not useless, but secondary to our primary goal. It's also very interesting. It's one of the things that we look at with virtual reference knowledge bases and go, why do we care about knowledge bases? Because unless you're asking the question, what value is there? What that is a tacit acknowledgement that what's happening is that's of secondary importance to the actual conversation. And that knowledge is about learning and not about dissemination. And this means that it's a very active process. And so, you know, I used to do this wonderful joke where I'd say, you know, this was the time when everyone was doing librarians are great search engines. And I said, no, they're not. Because what search engines do really well, we don't want to, which is give people a lot of crap quickly. You know, it's like a patron walks in and asks a question, and what we do is just start dumping reams of paper on them until they get collapsed. I can answer that question. I have 30,000 answers. We'll start with one. So what we're doing is we want to be a conversation. We want to have that dialogue. That's what makes reference in libraries in general is great. It's not that we know everything. But they were excellent in providing information with a question, with a need. We believe that the need is of primary importance. But it also means that we need to acknowledge that when people seek to learn, they want to control that process as well. This has led to a pressure to participate. Our patrons walking into our knowledge organizations want to contribute. They want to be part of it. They want to actively construct information. And they want the tools that help them do that. Now, we've already picked on the catalogs, and if you'd like, we can pick on the catalogs for the rest of the day, which is not very participatory. Here's my question. Here's everything we have. We don't care what you think. Right? Well, how much of reference is that as well? We think that a reference interview is our way of having conversations, and it is. But once again, what about the tools that we're doing it in? We're having a very participatory, active, engaged conversation in our tools, on our ground, on our terms. So, let's take these basic principles and begin to apply into reference. What does it say? First of all, if we're going to redesign a virtual reference system, what principles do we need to take in? First of all, the user is in control. Right? We like to think the user is in control, but the user basically turned us on and then we took control in most reference transactions. Let's put the user in control. It's all about learning. And learning is conversations and relationship of ideas. And learning is collaborative conversations. So I spent a week at OCLC, and the OCLC question points, Jeff's in the back, and Paula and Tam and Susan were kind enough to spend some time putting up with me. And we sort of said, if we started from scratch today, what would the ultimate digital reference interface look like? And I want to show you what we came up with. I'm kidding. There we go. Right? Imagine right now if the metaphor is sitting and walking up to a desk, and it's a very narrow desk, and it usually puts a barrier between us. Right? Imagine instead that the user walks up to a table. Oh, boy, Dave. Yay, that's a solution. Right? But the idea is it's a workplace. It's a work surface, and it's their work surface. And what they begin doing is, as they're exploring a topic, they begin laying out materials and ideas on that table, how they organize it, how they move it together, and then they begin to invite people to that table to say, does this make sense? Does it work? So let me give you just one idea of how that might work. So what are our three interfaces? Well, let's start with a simple thing. I drive my wife insane. Many reasons. One of which is I had this horrible assignment in high school, which was to analyze the lyrics of music. And I went to a Jesuit high school where they would pound me into lockers, and so you had to do these things. And now what it means is I have this sort of Pavlovian, you know, response to when I hear music on the radio, I have to listen to the lyrics, and it drives her insane because she's like, I'm like, do you know what this song is saying? And she's like, I don't care. You know, it's effective. So I'm listening to a piece of music, and I want to learn more about this piece of music. I may be doing this as an assignment or just for the heck of it, so I'm going to look for a piece of music. And in fact, I'm going to look for Gwen Stefani's Rich Girl because I'm hep and jiggy. And so I'm going to bring that piece of... I'm going to just put a search in. Now, I stole this from Apple, of course, but we're going to get to where these results come from. But they're different types of things. Down here, I can see music, and I'm going to drag that piece of music right into my space. And in fact, does it work? Oh, wait, I got to turn my volume off. I know where my speaker is. Right. Now, this is, I'm listening, and it's pleasant, and, you know, Gwen's getting down, and that's delightful. But then, once again, I'm listening to the lyrics there. And Gwen Stefani, brilliant person, weird lyrics. And so I start thinking, wait a minute, what's going on here? First of all, I think I've heard this before. Where have I heard this before? But I take it, and so, as with any item, I can click on that item, and it begins to say, well, this is what we know about this item. You know, things like, here's who sang it, artist and even, what album's on, what's the release date, standard bibliographic stuff. And I can, you know, just hit that little plus and make a relationship between, yes, here's a relationship between these two things. So what I'm doing is I'm dragging my ideas out. And I'm lurking on this, and I actually need some help. And so I'm going to go ahead and invite a friend in who also likes the music, and so I'm going to pop my people, which is that second icon. And here are my friends and homework helpers, and here's the librarian. And I'm going to pick on Jeff. So I'm going to bring Jeff Panka in, and I'm going to say, hey, Jeff, do you know how I can find the lyrics to this song? Now notice, first of all, he sees the same screen. There is no librarian interface. There is no friend interface. This is my table. But also, instantly, when I say that song, he can look at it, he can hear it, he can see it. And so he says, hold on, let me see if I can find the lyrics. He's going to go to the same interface, do the same search for the lyrics. He's going to find them, drag them right into that space. He goes, you know, here's someone who did a whole scape on the lyrics. Now, we're calling this interface scapes, like thought scapes or landscapes, right? So someone else has sort of dealt with this. And he says, I found it, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and add it. He just goes ahead and drags it in the space, and sure enough, you bring it up, here are the lyrics. And someone has done this before. And so what comes in with the lyrics isn't just the words, but all the relationships they built into it. And so, for example, if I click on that object, I can say, here are some of the quotes out of these lyrics. So when I read, I get me four Harduka girls to which confuses me, I'm easily confused, what I can do is actually follow that relationship that someone has built in their conversation, and I can find out that, in fact, these refer to Gwen Stefani's backup dancers, which I can go to Wikipedia and find the whole entry, which, by the way, is named after an area in Tokyo subway stop, which is very fashionable and cool. But now what I've done is I've built relationships, right? I'm building these relationships, and they're durable relationships. And so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, you know, I know I've heard something like this before. It's driving me crazy. And so what I'm going to do is, Jeff is useless on this topic, as he normally is, Jeff. And so I'm going to go back here, and rather than picking on one of my friends, I'm going to go ahead and bring a librarian in, because they know everything. And I'm going to say, you know, I've heard something, you know, hi, do you know if this song is a remake of something? And the librarian sort of listens to it and goes, duh. Actually, it's a remake of a song in Fiddler on the Roof. And I'm going to go ahead and add that information and uses our third little icon, which is adds more of these nodes up the top where they can add things from Google or the catalog or Amazon or what have you. And over the process of, as we're watching it all, they say, all right, well, this is a version of this song, which is part of this album, and here's all the other songs you want of. All right? So now what we said is, that's great, we're all done, I'm happy, I've heard what this lyric is, I figured it out, I log off, the librarian logs off, but this conversation's durable. And just like we saw with the Google presentation, where you can put your presentation up and share it, I can leave this scape up. All right? I can make this scape available. And so Jeff, on his way home that night, and being the show tune guy that he is, comes back and says, you know what? I know she did this with The Sound of Music, too. This woman is insane. She's stealing from all the classics. I've got to see. I think I put the... How much yodeling do you hear in popular music today? Not enough. Not enough. So he is able to, I'll just back up here a second, he is able to go back into this scape because it's available, and now he adds, here's another one. And so we've been able to keep this conversation. So the synchronous, asynchronous check. When you can work on it, work on it. Who invited people into the space? Who could I invite? Anyone I want. And I got a lot of people who say, oh yeah, but most of the time these patrons come in, they don't have a clue of what they want to ask. Fine. The first step they do is bring the librarian in and they start having a conversation. Now, I don't want to go too deep into it because I've been accused of being a little too techie in my life, but what's happening behind the scenes here on the back end, back, get it? Huh? All right. Is what we've done is we have a bunch of objects, music, people, we have discussions and the text of the discussion, we have text objects, we have web pages, we have CDs, we have these objects. But what's more, we've always had those, we have the relationships between those objects. And they're shareable, because we have my relationships. Remember that first thing where Jeff said, oh, there's another person who did escape like this, let me bring it in? We now have a relationship between all my relationships and that person's relationship. And now we can be social because we're socially constructing this information, but the artifacts that we're producing are also in a social context. I could say, you know, who bothers analyzing the lyrics of Gwen Stefani? If it's someone else weird like me, I need to know that person. And I could follow that conversation and find out, you know, there's a whole group of us anal-retentive musicians out there, right? And so the socialness, though, isn't something that we paste on. It comes from the process that we're doing. And because we have these structures and these objects and these relationships and lots of technical things that deal with all these objects and such, who says it has to be that interface, right? First one. Well, I don't have a powerful enough computer. What if we know cell phones are the way to go? What if they're visually impaired? It doesn't matter. These objects are the important in the relationships. You want to see it as on your phone? Fine. It looks just like a text thing. This and this and this. And then when you're done and you go back that night and you go, I want to follow up on that. And this thing isn't good enough. I'm going to log on. And then the same conversations that I can log in multiple methods. You want it in Blackboard? Put it in Blackboard. That's fine. Objects are there, relationships are there. You don't want the gooey Ajax thing, don't take it. Or just do it as a simple IM transaction where these look like object push, object this, URL here, blah, 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 and be able to bring them up together. And now, I mentioned before, where does the magic search box come from? The magic search box comes from you. Which is over time now, when someone searches for Gwen Stefani, if enough people are putting this relationship in, just like Google PageRank, begins to bubble up to the top. And now you can begin moving conversations in an object. And when you say things, give me something like this song, right? Maybe Gwen Stefani, you wouldn't find Rich Girl linked to whatever the other one was, Wind It Up, because they're not on the same album, but they were the same artist. But they're both remakes of, they both featured sampled remakes of Broadway music. And maybe More Like This brings other sampled music of Broadway hits that, trust me, no cataloger is going to spend a lot of time putting in at the metadata level. Right? It's a relationship between these objects. This is what makes the reuse of reference transactions so difficult. They're so context-laden. They have so much to do with the situation people are in. Well, now imagine as a librarian being invited in, you're able to see the context. How many times have we had to start with, well, what have you already looked at? Right? How many people have talked about the insulting Google question? Right? When someone comes in and they say, well, and the librarian goes, well, I'm going to start with Google. And the patron says, duh, I did that. Right? Now, duh, did that, you can see it. And not only that, you can see the conceptualization. You can see how they're relating objects together. Your reference interview isn't based on interrogating them outside of the situation. It's based on discussing and working with them inside the situation. So, in order to give us some time in terms of questions and in terms of feedback, and I'm driving, no doubt, the video guy crazy, I'm sorry. Some conclusions based on this. First of all, don't socialize reference or library. I mean, this is not like a socialized medicine. This isn't a political statement. This notion that we can take functions and throw functions at them drives me crazy. That, oh, we have a catalog. Let's make it a social catalog. Instead of asking the question going, oh, we have a catalog, that sucks. Right? Let's start with, we want a finding aid. We want a discussion mechanism. We want to start from core principles. My fear with this, and I want to be real clear, this isn't, you guys are doing brilliant stuff because you're finding things and we're innovating, and that's coming here. But up here, my real fear is we are so busy chasing Amazon and Google without first thinking if we're in the same freaking business as they are, that we're always going to be the second best Amazon and Google at our best days. What we need to do as a library field is focus on what we believe and invent the applications that best serve our mission and our needs. If they happen to look Google-esque, or we can happen to borrow them from Facebook or MySpace, that's great. But defining your mission by looking for cool features out in the world is going to make you insane, and it's going to make us look like secondary players. Okay? Innovate from core principles. You may hate MyScape's interface. Right? This is why I don't let people chat while I present, because I'm sure they do. Right? You may say that's wrong. I don't care. What I care about is that we talk about it, and we fight for it, and we think about it, and we innovate, and we bring ideas in from MySpace and Facebook and Amazon and Google, but we're not out there searching for a mission and hoping that if we paste enough of these together, we have a mission. We're doing that saying, boy, what we want is collaborative. Why do you want collaborative? It's one of the things that I love the OCLC thing about privacy and social networks, but it leaves this great, huge question mark. What it does brilliantly is it describes people are doing social network apps, these are the kinds of things, but it doesn't talk about why. Why? Why do people go to Facebook and go crazy on it? Why do people go Twitter? Why do they? Because what they're seeking to do is create their own environment. Why do Facebook pages look so busy? It's MySpace. Or MySpace pages, right? I'm going to put up the pictures. I'm going to put up, because I control it, right? Imagine if we can bring that to reference. And by the way, let's do the dot, dot, dot here. What the catalogers and doing this outside of a reference environment makes sense. I want to put my paper together. I want to do my research. I want to bring them together. We need to innovate from core principles. If you think this is a stupid idea, the answer to that is not to say, that was a stupid idea, Dave. You're welcome to. I got thick skin. But to then say, here's a better one. This is what's really important. I've been at this virtual reference game for 16 years now, right? And what's amazing to me is it's great. I think there's still cool and there's lots going on, but you don't have the ability to sit back and adopt. This is not still an adoption environment. Libraries are not an adoption environment. We do not simply seek and adopt. We must innovate. If you disagree, if you don't like it, if you think it can be done better, you have an obligation to try it. Now, what's amazing about Facebook and MySpace and Ning and Blogger and Twitter and whatever is the tools to try it are easy. this is one of the amazing, from an administrative tech standpoint, social networking sites are frightening because it means that every time I throw up a bureaucratic hurdle at an innovative librarian, they can just as easily step outside of my environment and build it themselves. Right? We don't do blogging in our library. Our IT people don't know how to do it. Hold on a second. We do now! Right? That's the world that we're in. And so now, though, that's an obligation. That ease of doing that is an obligation upon you to look around and say, I don't agree, I do agree, whatever, and create your own vision, demonstrate your own vision, and show your own vision. This is Dave's vision. This is some collaboration. I mean, I'll share the credit with my colleagues. I'll take the blame. Right? This is a vision of the future of reference and collaborative reference and, frankly, of libraries where it's users, truly a user-centered environment, but it's one. What we need to do is to proactively try it. Next time you go to a presentation and you don't like it, the next day email them your prototype, your thought, your idea. Every person here needs to feel not only enabled to innovate, but obligated to innovate. It is our jobs to push forward our field, identify our core powers and our core principles. If we do not do it, we will be stuck as an adoption environment of secondhand thoughts. And that is unacceptable. That is not a world that I want to work in, and I don't think that's a world you want to work in. So, with that, I will say thank you.
About 10 minutes for questions. So I'm going to ask all of the presenters to come back up to the stage. Yeah. And does anyone have any questions? Raise your hand so I can call on you.
All right, how many people think I'm stupid? I look away.
I loved what you had to say, but I'm kind of curious. The essential problem of how to get the librarian as one of the social network in the scape, how would that happen?
That's a good question. Initially, one of the things we were thinking of is, and that's why I really appreciated both of your presentations, which was how to bring people, make them even aware, and make the library part of the network. So once they're networked through MySpace or Facebook, the idea being that if you notice, there were sort of two icons there. One was a search icon and one was a person icon. Well, there really is no difference between the two, except that we want to make it really easy so when someone walks in and says, I got no place to even start, they can click and instantly get at a librarian and see what a librarian is. So I think it still very much involves the activities that you folks are involved with, which is making people aware that we're there and that we need the network and collaborative reference service so that we're one click away. But it's also putting them in a compelling application that they feel like we are their friends in their world as opposed to yet another application that we mount and hope for the best.
Any other questions? Yes.
I've got a basic idea, possibly a stupid question, but how do we access skates or use skates? How that is given?
He asked, how do you access skates? And I'll let you answer that, David.
Okay. I went to the FBI whistleblower session this morning, which was absolutely fabulous. You didn't get there. His poor fellow had to have his lawyer there, so every so often it was like... right now, skates is a concept. It's an idea. It's something that we're working out basically to show to folks and say, all right, what's here, what works, let's push on it, let's try it. So right now, skates is literally what you saw. And so, and my slides will be available on my website, and I'm sure through this as well.
Yeah, we're going to have a, put this on the Question Point blog so that you can continue to discuss all this. And you had a question.
Yeah, when I think of collaborative reference or, you know, making references in conversation, I think of it as bringing everybody in, like what was happening a little bit with their Facebook and MySpace pages where the whole community started working on the question instead of just the librarian and the person. So how does that happen in skates? Because it seemed like you just sort of added everybody like one at a time. So, I mean, the profile, the connections all stay. So, did that mean that you know, other people could just blunder onto it and start adding to it and answering questions.
Once again, I love talking in about theoretical vaporware because I can just say yes. In fact, hold on a moment. Yeah, it's still in that right now. But no, it's an interesting question because, and actually, I would like to turn that question to you folks in the following sense. Right? I found in social networking applications and blogging and such, there's this interesting need for ownership of place. My blog, my page, whatever. And the social good, in the sense that as long as I have a foundation I can launch from, I have no problem broadcasting out and sharing it. I mean, do you, does that make any sense in terms of you need a place, but you also need the public forum?
I'll comment first, because since I've discovered blogging, I've become an unbridled egotist in lunch mode. Everything I'm thinking about by blogging about it, or lately on Twitter, or putting up stuff on Facebook. But yeah, having a platform, if it wasn't for that, I'd be a classic librarian working on publishing an article in an obscure journal that no one's going to read. But I've got this incredible launching pad that makes my content findable, accessible. I can connect into other people's conversations by commenting on their blogs, or on their stuff in Flickr, or wherever. So you definitely need some sort of, I think, a platform. And I'd love to hear more about how sort of personal information management systems that are being developed and knowledge management systems could meet up with the world of reference services. It seems like what Dave is talking about kind of brings together some of those worlds along with the worlds of like the semantic web technology that allow information to be interconnected in a very rich and meaningful way.
I think that currently people who like to see themselves as information producers feel they need a forum. But if we could look at how people get to the information in blogs, how many people in this room have an RSS feed and have loaded it up with blogs? Okay, how many people in this room daily check their blog through their feed? Okay, all right. You know, how many people look every hour? But I think what I'm getting at is that many of us heard at some point that you really need to get on blogs, and so I got on blogs, and I didn't like the reader I was using a couple of years ago, and so I never looked at the blogs. And the way I encountered blogs was if I wanted some kind of information, I would go on Google, and occasionally I would wind up on a blog because that's where the information was. It really didn't matter to me that it was Stephen's platform. And, you know, I'm just saying this, David, because you asked the question of how important it is to have a platform. Now, if my behavior is more like the consumer, you know, the person who's going to have that workspace and say, I need to know something, I mean, I really don't care about, you know, who owns the platform, who he is, which kind of fits in with the rest of the way these, you know, this generation is getting their information. You know, remember when we were upset because we said, oh, my God, they're getting information on the Internet? They should get it out of a book. You know, and so the vessel and who created the vessel, you know, they don't care what the vessel is. You know, the easier the better. And they don't necessarily even care whose vessel it is. So I think for the producers of the information, we want it to be defined. This is my blog, my, you know, this is my MySpace profile. But I think that the people going to get the information, you know, then suddenly the walls come down.
Yeah.
Yes, in the back.
I'd like to pose a question back into the transition of what we think of now as traditional in a real physical space versus engaging in the service that we're seeing in the virtual. And many of the principles David, that you embrace is quite exciting because it guided a lot of the notions of social learning principles, guided a lot of design of new physical spaces.
Absolutely.
There's right now, particularly in the last 7 years, a movement of looking at libraries and the architecture of libraries to support and facilitate the whole concept of social learning and how it relates to information, knowledge management, what have you. can you imagine the role and function then of people who offer some assistance? I won't call them only reference librarians. In that tradition, we have a very strong association. After all, our profession is named after a physical architectural thing. It's not named after what we do, it's named after the space in which we did it. So, is there any thoughts about how that merger can happen between what may happen in reality space, in real space? And we still find huge numbers of students in this young generation wanting to meet and do something in a real space, and yet
yep.
Are there silos or are they brought together?
Oh, the question was, if I may summarize it. How do we look at physical spaces with some of these concepts? And one, acknowledge that a lot of physical spaces have been thinking towards these social interactions. And then, how do we take some of these concepts and reference and look at those physical spaces? And I'm thrilled to be in Philadelphia because I'm on sabbatical this semester, which is why I go with the Steve Jobs refusing to shave thing. And we've been working with the Philadelphia Free Library on just that question. They're looking at a $175 million building expansion. And what they want to do is build an innovative space of conversation. I've been quoted, and I'm willing to stand behind the idea of blow up the reference desk. I think I use the word burn because they're mostly wood. But I think that what we need to do is facilitate communities, right? And communities have their own ways of inviting people in, right? I think that a library is not a community. I think the library is an environment full of lots of different communities. One of the metaphors to change is instead of looking at the library as a series of collections, look at the library as a series of users that have their own collections. And so I think that what we need to do is build physical spaces in which we allow a lot of meeting spaces, informal meeting spaces and interactions. We make it very clear that once we're invited in, we're welcome to sit with them on every Thursday when they come and talk about this topic or when they need it. I think roving reference with lots of connections makes sense to me. And I very much take affront to the discussion that we all have to wear badges and little funny hats to identify that we're librarians, when we all know damn well that if we're well-dressed in a public library, people assume that we're librarians. Even if we are the person who opens the door at night or a board member, we're going to be asked questions. I think we just need to be ready. I think, frankly, looking way up front, the distinction between reference librarian and technical services librarian and this librarian and that librarian, particularly instructional librarians, I think we're all instructional librarians. I think we all might need to be ready for reference. So I think that the space is important to allow communities, but the answer is the communities need to help design where that reference person sits and how they get invited into it. Some places it makes perfect sense to have a big table in front of you because they like the status and that's what they're used to.
I think we have time for one more question.
It's not actually a question, but David, I was curious if you were familiar with Microsoft Surface.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you were doing that, that popped in my head.
And if they would like to send me a Surface unit? The question was, am I familiar with Microsoft Surface? And, you know, looking, yes. Microsoft Surface is in there, and looking at the multi-touch interfaces, and all of these are ideas. But I think what would be really interesting is if we actually took a physical space and let a big desk out there and let people see if this works. But a lot of what we're talking about is what we're learning in physical spaces we're not translating to electronic spaces. What we're learning in electronic, we're not translating to physical spaces. We need to create a true hybrid environment where people can bring their social networks in. I mean, don't let me pick on you as a BlackBerry user, but let's face it, this is a hybrid environment that she's in. She's both in a physical environment performing here, and she's in a virtual environment interacting with different spaces, and we need to have our libraries think that way.
Okay. Well, I want us all to give a round of applause for our panelists. Thank you very much, and we will be posting this on the Question Point blog. And I do want you to stop by the OCLC booth if you're interested in seeing our new Question Point chat widget. So thanks again for coming.